What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Alaska, baby! I'm headed to Alaska. Just kidding, I can't. I'm headed to Cape May tomorrow, and so are you. You better be there. Grand Hotel, 3 to 7... I get asked this every day, so you don't need a ticket, you don't need a reservation, just come to the show, and we'll hang out, and it'll be fun, it'll be a lot of fun. Now, I don't want to jinx it, but there's a possibility that after the show, something cool could take place. That's all I'm going to say. You should come to the show and hang out. You stay for a little bit, stay for all of it, it's up to you, whatever you want to do. The big story of the day, obviously, though, is this meeting with Putin, which is taking place in Anchorage, and we got the email from the White House to request press credentials, but we couldn't because we're going to KBA. But that's cool. The other big story, and the big story of the hour brought to you by Dr. Mike Venaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. Two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. The story that I have from Dave Weigel at Semaphore, how Trump's D.C. crackdown divided the city's Democrats. And this is interesting because what I said the other day was I think the Democrats are making a huge political mistake here. I got a note from a good friend of mine who I think is just watching too much MSNBC or something. It was like, how can you be okay with masked federal agents? And the answer that I gave is very simple. I said, whether or not the officer has a mask on does not change due process. Due process occurs in court. It doesn't occur on the street when you're being placed under arrest. Now, there's certain protocols they have to follow. They have to issue you your Miranda rights, and there's certain things that they have to do. If they don't, then the case can get tossed in court. But wearing a mask is not one of those requirements. I mean, the Supreme Court has never held that officers cannot cover their face. SWAT teams do it all the time. Undercover officers hide their identity and then arrest people. You know, like, I mean, like, you know how in the movies they're always like, are you a cop? Because if you're a cop, you have to tell me. No, you don't. And cops don't. So undercover cops who are selling drugs to somebody or buying drugs from somebody or going into a massage parlor or whatever else, they don't go in there and announce they're a cop. They go in there, they're part of a vice team, and they are undercover, and then they bust somebody. And you could argue, well, you didn't tell me your identity. I didn't know, but it's not going to hold up in court. It's the same thing if you disguise your identity to be undercover as part of a motorcycle gang or in the mafia or whatever else. I mean, there have been so many throughout the course of law enforcement, brave undercover officers who've given their lives in the line of duty by infiltrating everything from the Klan to the Hell's Angels to the mafia. So if an ICE agent has a mask, a face covering, it doesn't change the fact that you're getting arrested. And your due process happens in front of a judge in a court of law. That's what occurs. And I know that there's this myth that's being perpetrated out there that people are not getting due process, but that's just not true. It's just not happening. If it was happening, I would be outraged, but it's not happening. So it's hard for me to get fired up over what is a law enforcement tactic. And people are like, well, you're getting dragged off the street. I got news for you. If you drive home from a bar tonight and you had a couple drinks, there's a very good chance you're going to get dragged off the street against your will. Because no one willingly, like, nobody wants to go to jail. But there's a very good chance that an officer may pull you over and arrest you for DUI. And then you go to court and you've got to fight it out, or you plead guilty or whatever it is, or you challenge the validity of the breathalyzer. But the one thing I would advise you to do, based on a case of a buddy of mine recently, is to definitely take the breathalyzer. But, I mean, you're getting dragged off the street. If they've got an arrest warrant for you, if they catch you in the middle of a crime, if they've got probable cause, they're going to arrest you. You're getting dragged off the street. Every time a person is taken into custody, they rarely do so willingly. I'm not saying, and there's a difference between willingly and resisting arrest. I mean, willingly being, yay, I'm getting arrested, woohoo, I'm getting cuffed, I'm about to be placed into a car I can't get out of, and put into a cell I can't break free from. Man, maybe there's some. Maybe there are some people out there who actually do enjoy the process of getting arrested. And maybe there's some that are looking subconsciously to go back in. I mean, yes, there are people like that out there, of course. But they're the exception to the rule. For the most part, if you're driving home after having a couple drinks, you get pulled over and you get charged with DUI and you go to jail, you don't want to be there. So you're unwillingly placed into the back of a police car. You're not resisting arrest necessarily, but you don't want to be there. You're not like, oh, thank God, finally a DUI. Oh, I've been waiting for this. My whole life I've been waiting for one of these. It's the outrage that is just so phony, you know? And then you start getting into the, well, you're breaking up families. Like, well, that happens a lot of times. People go to prison and have kids. We don't necessarily make exceptions for that. It's like, well, I'm sorry, your dad's an axe murderer, but, well, we'll let him stay home with you on house arrest so that he can be around the kids. Now, he chopped up 11 people with an axe, but, I mean, he's got kids. Like, yeah, we separate families. It happens. Part of the problem in this country is that we have a lot of people in prison who are dads, and you've got a lot of families out there that don't have a father figure because the dads are criminals, and then the kids wind up going down the path of crime. And then they don't have any male role models to look up to, so they look up to these teenagers who are in gangs, and then they recruit these kids knowing that the kids won't get in trouble, and this becomes a revolving door. And from my perspective, I mean, I think that for Democrats to be outraged over federal law enforcement assisting local PD, a local police department that is drastically understaffed and drastically over budget, is just a stupid political place to be when you're talking about a 30-day mobilization. And even if it extends beyond 30 days, they should welcome the help. They should welcome the help. They should go, thank you. Like, we got 950 empty slots that we got to fill for cops. We got 2 million hours of mandatory overtime. If the ATF and the FBI and the DEA are going to help us and you're picking up the dime, thank you. So this story here, President Donald Trump used the template for his takeover of D.C. policing that worked for him before. Move quickly, establish a large and visible security presence, then wait for Democrats to splinter over how to respond. Democrats in Congress denounced the 30-day mobilization inside the Capitol, which Trump previewed during the 2024 election as an unjustified power grab. They vowed to block an extension. The city's unelected attorney general called it an unlawful abuse of emergency powers. Blah, blah, blah. However, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser was more cautious, criticizing Trump's takeover as authoritarian, while also suggesting that the city could work with him. Quote, what I'm focused on is the federal surge and how to make the most of the additional officer support that we have, the mayor told reporters on Tuesday. Hours later, in a video conversation with community leaders, the mayor said that the intervention was legal. The president invoked a part of the charter that has been his prerogative to invoke. She acknowledged the city had longstanding problems, that illegal gun trafficking and violence in nightlife areas, and the federal government could now help with them. Imagine that. And the mayor said, we don't have a crime surge, and the MPD, the Metropolitan Police Department, is doing a great job. I don't doubt they're trying their best, but the city council has passed laws that, quite frankly, make it very difficult for them to do their job. The city has longstanding problems, the mayor acknowledged, gun trafficking and violence. Just imagine if we had the number of D.C. police officers that we should have, if we were at 3,800 instead of 3,100 and some, said the mayor. While protesters rallied near the White House denouncing the administration's colonialism and demanding D.C. statehood, Bowser was trying to effectively co-own the takeover. In Bowser, the president has found an unlikely partner, a Democrat who had repeatedly clashed with progressives on crime, denouncing the defund the police movement that flourished in 2020 and stalling a criminal justice bill that Republicans in Congress later repealed. On Wednesday, after announcing that he'd host this year's Kennedy Center Honors, the president suggested that more rollbacks of the Capitol's criminal code were on the way. We're going to need a crime bill that we're going to be putting in, Trump told reporters, and it's going to pertain initially to D.C. But congressional Democrats all lined up to criticize the president. D.C.'s legal status is unique. It's a city with home rule powers limited by Congress and the Constitution. And, you know, they only got that home rule charter when President Richard Nixon, of all people, signed the law giving D.C. the home rule charter. But at the end of the day, D.C. is still under the watchful eye of Congress. And Congress can veto anything that it wants. It effectively still has the ultimate say over Washington, D.C. It's not a state. The founders did not want it to be a state. And it has historically always been the entity that exists because of the federal government. So people who are screaming about federalism doesn't apply to Washington, D.C. It applies to Maryland. It applies to Virginia. It does not apply to D.C. Now, D.C. politicians keep screaming about statehood, and it's not going to happen. It should not happen. I don't want it to happen. The president doesn't want it to happen. Nobody in their right mind should want it to happen, because if you do statehood for D.C., then what you're doing is you are giving two more Democrat senators. That's what you're doing. But the president has said, no way, no chance is D.C. getting statehood. Good.
Statehood is ridiculous. We want to straighten the place out. Statehood's ridiculous. It's unacceptable. It's the Democrats want it because the Democrats have, you know, about 95% in this little area. Even I didn't get it very much. They want that. They want to pick up two senators, and it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And that's the least of the reasons why, by the way, but that's one of the reasons why. What we want to do is make Washington, D.C. the greatest, most beautiful, safest capital anywhere in the world. And that's going to happen.
And it should happen. But no, they're not going to get statehood. I told you, if they do get statehood, the ultimate plan, the grand plan for Democrats is you pick up D.C. as a state, you get two senators. You make Puerto Rico a state, you get two senators. You kill the filibuster, and you have absolute control over the Senate. And it doesn't matter, even if the Republicans wind up winning the House and the White House, you still have the Senate there to block nominations, to block legislation, to block anything. And the ultimate Democrat plan, of course, is also to expand the Supreme Court, to make it basically a mini legislature, so they can get anything through that they want there. The mayor of D.C. is playing it smart. Why is she doing that? It's because the people who live in D.C. know that crime is a problem. And it's elite. Again, we're back to the elite white liberals who are the ones who are saying it's not a problem. Even on Morning Joe this morning, they acknowledge as much. 91% of Washington residents say crime is a problem, with black residents and lower income residents significantly more worried about crime than white residents and those with higher incomes, period, full stop.
The answer to this problem for Democrats is not, oh, everything's okay, there's nothing to see here, move along. Oh, Washington has dropped 24% or whatever in crime. Well, let me give you some other numbers. The Washington Post took a poll in late April, early May. 91% of Washington residents say crime is a problem. 91%. 51%, it is an extremely serious problem. And John Heilman, we've had people before put this in racial terms. And this is, I must say, this is one thing that I think Democrats have gotten so wrong about crime. So wrong about crime. Let me just read the Washington Post here. There are stark divides among lines of race and income in the poll, with black residents and lower income residents significantly more worried about crime than white residents and those with higher incomes. As they were last year, black women are among the most concerned, with 65% saying crime is a very or extremely serious issue, compared with 82% who said the same thing last year.
See, why are black moms particularly concerned? Because they have kids. They have kids who are being recruited by gangs, kids who are getting killed in the crossfire. But again, you have the, it's the classic case of the elites in Congress and the white liberal elites who live in the safer neighborhoods of D.C. I'm not saying all of D.C. is a hellhole. I'm saying that there are neighborhoods of D.C. It's like Philly. I mean, even though crime has spread into the more posh areas of Center City, we know what neighborhoods are the key neighborhoods for crime. It's the same thing in D.C. There are neighborhoods in D.C. that are very bad. And then you have crime that spreads into the safer neighborhoods. So you have crime that spreads into Georgetown. But for the most part, if you live in, if you're lucky enough and you can afford to live in Georgetown, you don't have to worry. You're okay. The odds of you getting shot to death are significantly lower than if you live in Anacostia, which is a black part of the city. And who are the people that are decrying this? The white college-educated liberals that live in Georgetown, in the brownstones that go for millions of dollars a year. It's the problem the Democrat Party has, and this is what I keep saying, is they are so out of touch with the communities that are actually affected by crime. And so they just look foolish here. And it's, again, it's another trap that was set by President Trump, and they walk into it. They walk right into it. The moment that MSNBC's Chris Matthews, I love this, the moment that MSNBC's Chris Matthews and Mika Brzezinski finally realize they've been duped by Trump into defending violent crime in D.C.
And the murder rate, you can't keep saying violent crime is down, but the murder rate's up. To the average person, the murder rate's about life and death. You don't brag about a rising murder rate. And the Democrats are, I agree with you, Mika, they're falling into the trap of defending what's indefensible.
It's a trap. Yes, it's a trap. I mean, if it's not a winner politically to say, oh, you're wrong, look at the data. Because, you know, if one violent crime happens in a very heavily populated part of the city, people hear about it and it's visceral. They don't want it. And they want to, they'll gravitate to the person who appears to be doing something about it.
And the murder rate,
see
you
that?
Can't keep saying.
And this is what I said the other day, again, on America's Newsroom, shameless plug. Nobody cares. They don't, the people in the neighborhoods affected by crime don't care what the data and statistics say. They don't care. They want to be safe, and they know they're not. They don't wake up in the morning and go, oh, well, the data says crime's down. We're good. When they see drug dealers and gangs on the streets and they hear bullets flying, what the data says, we're fine. We're good. Crime's down. We also know the data was manipulated by a corrupt police chief. But again, I don't think it doesn't matter. The data and the statistics don't matter because it's also how it's all formulated. You know, and if you're not reporting the arrests, if you're not reporting these things properly, and even if you were, to the people in the neighborhoods that are affected by crime, all they know is it is not down. You can say anything you want. But to the point of those screaming about federal overreach, this is not federal overreach. The framers of the Constitution were very specific in how they created D.C. The states created the federal government, but the federal government created Washington, D.C. And up until the D.C. Home Rule Charter Act was signed by Richard Nixon in the 1970s, which still gives Congress the ultimate say over D.C., this is not federal overreach. I'm sorry, but it's not. Period. This is what the president said regarding the 30-day limit.
Your federalization of the police has a 30-day limit unless Congress acts to extend it. Are you talking to Congress about extending it, or do you believe 30 days is sufficient?
Well, if it's a national emergency, we can do it without Congress, but we expect to be to Congress before Congress very quickly. And again, we think the Democrats will not do anything to stop crime, but we think the Republicans will do it almost unanimously. So we're going to need a crime bill that we're going to be putting in, and it's going to pertain initially to D.C. It's almost, we're going to use it as a very positive example, and we're going to be asking for extensions on that, long-term extensions, because you can't have 30 days. 30 days is, that's by the time you do it. We're going to have this in good shape, and don't forget, in the border, everyone said it would take years and you'd have to go back to Congress. I never went to Congress for anything. I just said, close the border. And they closed the border. And that was the end of it. I didn't go back to Congress. We're going to do this very quickly, but we're going to want extensions. I don't want to call national emergency. If I have to, I will. But I think the Republicans in Congress will approve this pretty much unanimously.
Yeah, I would rather him not declare a national emergency. I'd rather him do it through Congress. Congress has the power, and Congress and Republicans have control of Congress. So there's no need to declare a national emergency. I want national emergency declarations limited as much as possible, so that we don't sound like hypocrites when the Democrats do it and they declare a national emergency on climate change or whatever other nonsense they do. I want us to be careful about that. But the Congress has the power to do it under the law. So then just do it. Extend it. And then be done. All right. More to come in our fourth and final hour as we get ready for a big show in Cape May tomorrow. Don't go away.
The rich. What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
It's the Oli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
On the way to Cape May, I can feel it. 24 hours from now, I'll be wrapping up our fourth and final hour. I'll be joined by my special guest host, Dr. Victoria Coates, tomorrow. So that'll be fun as we talk about the Trump-Putin summit. And I'll get into some of the things that he talked about from the Oval Office confab. Today, he did a thing where he signed Social Security, strengthening that, and made fun of Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, and that was hysterical. Also was asked about Tulsi Gabbard and the classified documents and crime in D.C. as well. So great to have you with us here, and I appreciate it. But remember, tomorrow, live, 3 to 7 p.m. in Cape May, you don't need a ticket. You don't need a reservation. Just come to the show. President Trump today was asked about the job Tulsi Gabbard is doing and the new documents that were declassified that we talked about earlier in the show today with our buddy Brooke Singman. And this is what he had to say regarding that.
Tulsi Gabbard declassified more documents last night related to the Russiagate hoax.
She's doing a great job, by the way. That was another fake story. I'm very happy with the job she's doing. That's right. They declassified some terrible documents talking about Democrats and what they did. Yep. Radical left lunatics.
It showed that then DNI James Clapper sent out emails to IC officials saying that it would be a team sport to push then the debunked the 2017 ICA report and that it might need them to compromise on their normal modalities. What's your reaction to the latest declassification? And in your view, sir, what does real accountability look like for the players?
It's incredible what we're finding. Absolute proof of guilt. And we'll see what happens. But Clapper and Comey and that whole group of criminals, they're criminals, and they made it very tough. You know, they did the fake Russia witch hunt that lasted for 2 years, and I got totally exonerated. There was no doubt about it. They should have done it in one day, not 2 years, but it was a whole scheme to try and demean Trump so that I couldn't win an election. And that is a criminal group of people. They're sick people, and they're criminals, and they should be taken care of.
Yeah, that, you know, that's the thing. These are criminals, sick people who should be taken care of. And the truth is coming out, and we're happy the truth is coming out because the truth needs to come out. And that's what has to happen here. I mean, we need to get the answers to everything that they've done. And we need people to be held accountable, which is good. The president was also talking about the issue of crime, obviously, in D.C. And what he was saying was that, you know, it's amazing how Democrats are turning around and being so against this. And with Ukraine, I mean, he emphasized this point about Ukraine, which is that it's you know, Russia is the bad guy here. I mean, for the Putin puppet here to say that Russia is the bad guy, it's amazing. Take a quick listen to this.
And that is a criminal group. Well, he came to our country, and I heard CNN fake news talking about that was a big win for him. Normally, he would say the opposite, but they said, oh, it's a big win that he came here. Normally, he would say the opposite, you know, he came here. I think that President Putin would like to see a deal. I think if I weren't president, he would take over all of Ukraine.
Yes.
It's a 100%. War that should have never happened. If I weren't president, in my opinion, he would much rather take over all of Ukraine. But I am president, and he's not going to mess around with me.
No doubt about it. I mean, that's 100% true, don't you think? And yeah, the fact that he's coming to America is a win. He's coming to Alaska. And that is a win. I don't know how you say that that's a win for Putin, but it's just, again, they have to frame it in such a way that, you know. The president also brought up, as he was signing this, to protect Social Security, get illegals off of Social Security, get fraud out of Social Security. And the Social Security administrator was talking about how they're getting rid of the fraud and going after cheats and stopping people who don't deserve it from getting the money. The president was asked about Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and it kind of Dzora Mandami. Take a listen.
Eric Gashow from Lindell TV. How are you today, sir? Democrats like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren continue to peddle the lie and the claim that you're trying to cut Social Security despite your repeated promises to protect it. Why do you think they keep pushing this misinformation and literally terrorizing the elderly in America that sadly keep watching the very misleading mainstream media?
I love your question. I should have called you almost first, but I love his questions also always. But it's such a good question. It's so vicious what they do. Elizabeth Warren said she was an Indian. We call her Pocahontas. She's a liar. She lied her whole career. Based on the fact that she was an Indian, she was able to get into certain colleges, get certain jobs, get into certain universities to work there. She's a liar and a mean person. She's a nut job.
Pause it here. Wouldn't it be amazing if the president did call her America's mother-in-law? I don't think he ever would. I don't think he knows my nickname for her, but that would be amazing. But he's tearing into her. It's fine just going into her as a liar and a nut job. That's more than enough. That makes me happy. I mean, I'm good with that. You good with that? We're good with that, right? We're good with that. Justin, it's your birthday. You good with that? You good with that. All right, good. All right, excellent. As long as we're all good with that. All right, keep going.
I watched her the other night. She's all hopped up endorsing a communist in New York City. And she was all excited and jumping up and down. She's got to take a drug test. She really does. She's got to take a drug test. There's no way somebody can act that way and be normal. What she's done to our financial institutions, she destroys people. Do you know that you had a lot of great banks in the Midwest and banks that loaned to farmers and others, and they went out of business. She put them out of business. Stone cold mean. Banks that were open 150 years, family banks that supplied the farmers and manufacturers and others, and she put him out of business. She's a mean, horrible human being. Bernie Sanders, I don't mind him so much. He's just a liberal guy, very liberal guy. He's a wacky guy. He's still sharp. I got to tell you, you know, he's 86 or 87 or something. He's still sharp. You compare that to Joe Biden. It's, you know, sort of what happened. So I don't mind Bernie Sanders. With him, you know what you're getting. You're getting a guy. He's a nasty guy. But he's somebody that, I don't know if I call it a fastball, but he's able to throw the ball pretty well. He's okay. I watched him the other day. He was totally on the opposite side of things. I will say this. The biggest issue right now and an issue that's really taken hold is crime, stopping crime in the cities. And the Democrats are fighting the stopping of crime. So I think that's like men playing in women's sports is okay, or transgender for everybody, okay. But this is a bigger issue. This is the biggest of all issues. Crime is rampant in D.C. It's rampant in our generally blue-run cities. And
you know, it's funny, too, because the this is very much what I said the other day in America's Newsroom. I didn't make the transgender comparison, but I said, you know, for Democrats to be against this is so politically stupid, right? I mean, it's just the height of political stupidity. You know, and they say, the president went on to say that he got calls from a lot of Democrats who were thanking him for what he was doing in D.C., thanking him. And he's not a dictator because the federal government has this power. As I've been saying before, this is not a state. Washington, D.C. is a creation of the federal government. It is not a state. It's very different than a state. The president is not abusing his authority. I would, again, still like him to go through Congress if he extends it beyond 30 days, because I just think that we need to rein in the national emergencies because the left uses them, and I don't want to be accused of being a hypocrite down the road. And Congress should be able to do that. We have the House and we have the Senate, so it should be easy to do. You know what I mean? Should not be an issue as we're talking about all these things. So, all right, what we're going to do is we'll take a quick break. I want to give you more of what the president had to say as he took questions today. They asked him about a bunch of different things, obviously, and we'll get to that as we continue our fourth and final hour. But tomorrow, live in Cape May, I want to see you there, okay? Come on, it's our last show of the summer. You don't want to miss it. You're going to miss it, and then you're going to have major FOMO, fear of missing out. I don't want you to have that. So join us in KMA tomorrow, and we'll be right back.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
On the way to Cape May, baby. On the way to Cape May. You know, there's actually a warning. You have all these crazy Trump derangement syndrome lefties out there who are sucking on pacifiers. They're adults sucking on pacifiers. So now there's warnings being issued about pacifiers, which is to say, please stop sucking on pacifiers because you're going to ruin your teeth, you idiots. You're going to ruin your teeth. You absolute morons. But no, there's actually a story in the New York Post today about pacifiers and about the warning on pacifiers. You think I'm adult pacifier trend can wreak havoc on mouth, dentist warns. Not very complicated. Everybody should know this. Everybody should understand this. Of course, the idiots, though, who are the ones who are doing this. Dentists are gritting their teeth over a bizarre new fad that has adults popping pacifiers like babies as a self-soothing practice is popular in China begins to take hold in the U.S. There's a reason we don't drink out of baby bottles or suck on pacifiers as adults, said an orthodontist. Wreaks havoc on swallow and bite patterns. No kidding. What's got grown-ups doing this? Trump. That's why. Trump, because they can't take Trump's America. These friggin' lunatics. The president was asked a question today about his meeting with Putin. and Zelensky and where all that's going. And this is the question and what he had to say earlier today from the Oval Office as we get ready to kick it over to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla. And I get ready to eat because I'm starving because I forgot to eat lunch again today. And I was dealing with this stupid migraine. So thanks again to stunt brain Michael Pelko for filling in for me yesterday. I'm going to go see a specialist. Migraines are the worst. If you get them, you have my absolute sympathies. They're just brutal. I mean, they come on, and I tried this new medicine that's supposed to be like the miracle. Worked a couple times in the past, but it didn't work this time. And I took two of the pills and, you know, and I take magnesium and you do all the things to prevent it. But, you know, it's just it comes on. And, you know, I actually asked a doctor about Botox yesterday as a treatment for it. And he said, well, yeah, but the problem is your migraines are not just in one spot. So that's not going to work for you. So, you know, there you go. But I also have an issue where I apparently stop breathing at night. It's not sleep apnea. It's not obstructive sleep apnea. I don't have that. But my brain, for some reason, tells my lungs to stop breathing. It's like my brain is trying to kill me. I know. It's crazy, right? So I'm going to see a pulmonologist on Monday, a Cooper pulmonologist, about this issue because I don't want to die, obviously. But no, for some reason, my brain is sending a signal to stop breathing. And so the doctor that I saw, the great ENT doctor, Dr. McGrath, who's in Marlton, New Jersey, he's the one that did Bridget's deviated septum surgery. Great doctor, Dr. McGrath. Great, great guy. And he was saying, you know, well, that could be causing the migraines. You know, if you stop breathing at night and then your brain has to overreact and then your heart and your lungs have to overreact, I mean, that could be doing it, you know. So, well, that's a very, very plausible idea, doc. Oh, and you might have seen, I posted this on social media earlier today. I was burning a paper bag. We're making a treasure map. Remember years ago we did this with Patrick? We buried a treasure for him and we discovered a treasure map and he found the treasure. So we're doing that this year with Reagan. But now Patrick and Claire are old enough to know that we staged it, obviously. So they're in on it with us, which is great. So Claire drew the map and she and I today set it on fire in various corners of the map and wrinkled it and then soaked it in tea bags to give it that weathered antique look. And then we're going to spend the next week before we go on vacation loading it up with piratey looking jewels for the treasure chest, and then bury it and let Reagan discover. So Reagan will discover the map before we leave Jersey. And then when we go to the beach, she'll find the buried treasure. So we're very excited about this, as you can imagine. Anyway, here's the president on the issue of Russia and Ukraine.
DC crime. Are you prepared to offer Vladimir Putin access to rare minerals to incentivize him to end the war?
We're going to see what happens with our meeting. We have a big meeting, and it's going to be, I think, very important for Russia, and it's going to be very important for us, and important for us only that we're going to save a lot of lives. Look, we have, you know, we're not paying any money, as you know, to Ukraine. We're supplying equipment. We're being paid 100% plus for that equipment by NATO. And I got NATO up from 2% to 5% of GDP. They now have billions of dollars. And NATO is a very rich group of countries. And we make the best military equipment anywhere in the world by far. And they're buying our equipment and they're paying 100% for the equipment, 100%. In fact, they owe us about $2 billion now. They're going to send a check. Another one was sent recently for $1 billion. So we're not spending any money anymore. Biden gave $350 billion, got nothing for it. And if you look, and by the way, we also signed a rare earth deal where we get, you know, years of rare earth to get our money back, the money we spent. But what I'm really doing this for is to save thousands of soldiers a week. You have Russian soldiers, you have Ukrainian soldiers, and then you'll have missiles dropped into various cities and towns in Ukraine. And they're losing last week they lost 7,251 people, mostly soldiers, Russian and Ukrainian soldiers. I'm doing it for that reason. We have a meeting with President Putin tomorrow. I think it's going to be a good meeting, but the more important meeting will be the second meeting that we're having. We're going to have a meeting with President Putin, President Zelensky, myself, and maybe we'll bring some of the European leaders along, maybe not. It's I don't know that it's going to be very important. We're going to see what happens. And I think President Putin will make peace. I think President Zelensky will make peace. We'll see if they can get along. And if they can, it'll be great. You know, I've solved six wars in the last 6 months, a little more than 6 months now. And I'm very proud of it. I thought the easiest one would be this one. It's actually the most difficult. We had one war raging, as you know, for 37 years. One in the Congo with Rwanda was raging for 31 years. We solved six of them, made peace, not just solved them, we made peace. If you look at Pakistan and India, that was, planes were being knocked out of the air. Six or seven planes came down. They were ready to go. Maybe nuclear, we solved that. I thought this would be maybe an easier one. It never made sense, this war. It would have never happened when I was president. If I were president, this war would have never happened. But millions of people have been killed. And I'm there for one reason, to see if I can solve. This was Biden's war. This isn't my war. I want to see if I can stop the killing. Yeah.
There you go. I mean, I want to see, can we stop the killing? Can we stop the killing? That's the key. And yeah, I mean, yeah, can we stop the killing? And he said, you know, Putin's at fault here. I mean, the Russian puppet has been very clear that Putin's at fault and something has to be done here. No doubt about that. And that's a good thing that he's saying that. A very good thing that he's saying that.
I'm there for one reason, to see if I can solve. This was Biden's war. This isn't my war. I want to see if I can stop the killing. Yeah.
Do you plan to offer him access to that at all?
We have great rare earth. We made that as payment for all of the money that we've spent so foolishly in Ukraine. We spent $350 billion.
Unbelievable.
Now, Europe spent $1 billion.
Unbelievable.
That's a lot of money. They spent $100 billion. That's a lot of money. But we shouldn't be spending a lot more money than them, and they understand that. And I think that's maybe why we're not spending money anymore. We're not spending any money. They're paying us for everything. So it's pretty, people are shocked when they hear it. They don't even understand. They don't even write about it. But we're not spending money. But we are spending a lot of time trying to get the war solved. If we can get the war solved, we'll be very happy. As far as rare earth, that's very unimportant relative to, I'm trying to save lives.
There you go. All right, listen, that's the show. Enjoy the rest of your night. Justin, enjoy your rest of your birthday, buddy. We'll see you in Cape May tomorrow. Okay, Grand Hotel of Cape May, and the show starts at 3, and you better be there, okay? 3 to 7 p.m., the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. Fox Across America is up next. Keep the conversation going on X, at Rich Zeoli. Thank you for listening.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most, exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.